everyone. This is Cartoons to Castles,
the history behind the mouse and magic. I'm Melanie.
And I'm Jessica. We're best friends and Disney nerds who wanted to learn more about the history behind the Walt Disney Company's movies, shows, music, theme parks, and more, and share it all with you.
So thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode.
Welcome back, everyone, to episode 5 of Cartoons to Castles.
Episode 5.
We are so excited to welcome you all back. We hope you have enjoyed our first 4 episodes, our most recent one being all about The Parent Trap, all 5 movies we discovered. And before we get started in this week's episode and introducing our guest, we'd love to go ahead and read some reviews that you guys left this past week on Apple Podcasts. Melanie, do you want to kick us off?
The first one is from Tom Avandi, and he says, "So fun and whimsical, 5 stars. I have enjoyed this podcast and all of the fun Disney tidbits that are not commonly known." And then the other one is from Christina of Cali. She says, "Love it, 5 stars. This is such a cute Disney podcast. I love the way they have a natural enthusiasm for all things Disney, which you just can't fake. I can't wait for more episodes." Yes, that level of nerdery, you really cannot fake. It's true.
It's true. And we have another one from Katie and June. They say, "Delightful. I love listening to this podcast so much. It's the perfect and much needed escape from the news today. It's so wonderful to hear women talking about Disney history, an arena that is often dominated by men. I highly, highly recommend this podcast and the companion Instagram account that provides a welcome visual companion to each episode." Thank you so much. That means a lot. We were hoping that the Instagram would be just what you said, a nice visual companion for the things that we talk about. And yeah, we love that Melanie and I are here talking about Disney history with you guys.
And I want to give credit to Jessica for our cute Instagram. She is the brainchild or the mastermind behind our Instagram account. So thanks, Jess, for always keeping it updated and posting cute things. I really love seeing what you post on our Instagram.
Thank you. And that's just at Cartoons to Castles on Instagram if you guys want to check it out. And just want to mention that these reviews mean so much to us, not only because it makes our day to read the positive reviews, but, you know, we put in so much hard work and dedication. You know, it's a labor of love for this podcast. And when you give us those ratings and reviews, that helps us rank in Apple Podcasts, which helps new people discover us. So thank you guys so much. And if you have a moment, leaving a review would be so appreciated.
Yeah, so on to the episode.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and bring on our guest. She is an actress from Northern Virginia. She's also a digital content creator who loves sharing her passions on Instagram. She is especially obsessed with all things Wizard of Oz and Disney. And in addition to constantly frequenting Disneyland, she loves to Disney bound, and she's even worked with Disney, Oh My Disney, and Disney Style. She grew up watching pretty much everything Disney and is a serious, hardcore Disney lover and fan.
Please welcome Tiffany Lene Sutton.
Hi, guys.
Hi. We are so happy to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Oh my gosh, we cannot wait to talk Disney with you. Why don't you tell everyone what topic you chose and why you picked it?
I chose the topic of Disney Channel original movies, more commonly known as DCOMs. And the reason I chose it is because growing up, my experience with the Disney Channel always went hand in hand with Disney Channel movies. And when I think back on my childhood, it is filled with hours and hours of these films. And I just feel like it's part of like who I am and how I grew up.
And yeah. Tiffany, now for some of your friends, I got to be a part of it. You did a DCOM, a Disney Channel original movie. Not necessarily DCOM. It was also just Disney Channel too.
It was, I believe, it was sitcoms full on and movies. Disney Channel. It was television series for Disney Channel, movies for Disney Channel. It was just like all Disney Channel history.
Yeah, you did a trivia and it was so hard. Tiffany knows her Disney Channel, and so I'm so excited to hear you chat about it. Oh
God. But I would have bombed that one. I totally would have bombed it.
When I was going over like researching this stuff, I was thinking about that trivia and I was just like, God, I feel so bad that no one else grew up with Disney Channel the way I did. Because in my brain, I was like, if you watched anything in Disney Channel, you'd know these answers. And I was just like, God, they knew nothing. None of those people knew anything. I was like, what were they watching?
Yeah.
My husband nailed the Disney afternoon round, but other than that.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about this podcast is that Jessica and I are a whole decade apart in age, which I've brought up before. I like to joke how old I am, but
wait, does that mean you're my age?
I don't know. I'm not going to make you reveal your age. So I grew up with a different version of the Disney Channel than Jess did, or maybe even you did, Tiffany, because I grew up with like the Avonlea Disney Channel and the new Mickey Mouse Club and the very early days of the Disney Channel. And then, you know, I didn't really have it later during college. So it's interesting getting the different perspective on the fandom from the younger, like millennial generation to my sort of tail end of the Gen X generation. It's cool to hear how the fandom affected our childhoods differently.
I agree. I think I'm older than every single person who was in my trivia. So like to them, Disney Channel meant High School Musical on. And I had been like in college. I was done with college when like High School Musical came out. So I was like, oh, none of you guys are going to know any of this.
Well, yeah. Melanie, do you want to kick us off with the early history of Disney Channel original movies?
I do. So this is probably going to be the segment that is not the Disney Channel that a lot of people who will be listening to this would know, because they probably know, like Tiffany said, like High School Musical and on. But it is interesting to see the early days of the original movies and to see how it evolved. So I'll start with a little bit about the origin of the Disney Channel. I am sure we're going to do an episode on the Disney Channel itself in the future, but just briefly to give some context, I wanted to talk about the origins of the Disney Channel. So the idea of a Disney cable TV network was first floated in 1977 by Walt Disney Productions executive Jim Jamiro, who thought it would be a great way to bring new TV and film projects from the studio to a wider audience. He was turned down by the Disney chairman at the time, whose name was Card Walker, because the company was focusing on creating Epcot at Walt Disney World at the time. That's a big project. He probably wanted to focus on that.
Kind of big.
Yeah. In 1981, the idea of a Disney cable network was revived, and the company entered into a partnership with Group W, which was also known as the Westinghouse Broadcasting Company. Group W would later drop out of the deal due to disagreements about creative control and finances, and the Disney Channel was then completely under the umbrella of Walt Disney Productions, with Alan Wagner as the first president of the channel. A formal announcement about the Disney Channel's launch was made in early 1983, and on April 18th, 1983, at 7 a.m. Eastern Time, the Disney Channel aired Good Morning Mickey, which was its first program and its first original series, and featured Disney animated shorts. At that time, the Disney Channel aired for 16 hours each day from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., and by December of 1983, the channel had 611,000 subscribers. So before the Disney Channel Original Movies, or DCOMs, had that name, they were called Disney Channel Premiere Films. 44 films were officially released on the Disney Channel as Disney Channel Premiere Films, and four more movies that aired in 1996 and 97 have been kind of under debate as to whether or not they're premiere films or DCOMs or neither, but I'll get into that later. So the Disney Channel's first made-for-cable movie was called Tiger Town and starred Roy Scheider as a struggling baseball player in his last season before retirement. The plot revolves around a 12-year-old boy who experiences a tragedy and turns to his favorite things, baseball and the Detroit Tigers, as a way of coping. He begins to believe in magical thinking and is convinced that by simply having faith in his favorite team, they can turn their season around. Which they did. Spoiler alert. I shouldn't say spoiler alert after I do the spoiler. Whatever. Anyway.
They've had a long time to watch this.
I was going to say, it's past the time.
It's past. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tiger Town premiered on the Disney Channel on October 9th, 1983, and then had a brief theatrical release only in Detroit in June of 1984. The movie went on to win the Cable Ace Award for Dramatic Special and was nominated in two other categories. On the Internet Movie Database, this movie has a 6.7 out of 10 rating from the site's users. And just for fun, I thought I'd read one of those reviews. Do you want to hear one of the Tiger Town reviews?
Yeah, you know I love old reviews and VHS copy.
I'm taking a page out of Jessica's playbook and reading a silly review. So,
love it.
This is from a user who calls himself Ships and is from 2005. He rates the movie a 10 out of 10 and says, "Hopefully it will be my boy's favorite. I never knew this film existed until I was looking for an 80s Detroit Tiger games on eBay and saw this old VHS. My wife and I are having a boy in August, and I have been shopping for Disney movies anyway, and accidentally came across a Detroit Tiger Disney movie. Seeing I'm a huge Tiger fan and plan to take my boy to many games at Comerica Park, this film will be perfect for getting him a jump on becoming a Tiger fan too. I just watched it the other day, and I think any kid would love this film. Maybe if my dad wasn't such a piece of crap, I too would have enjoyed this movie as a kid." If you have kids who are into baseball or into sports in general, then you should buy a used VHS copy of Tiger Town on eBay. I know there have been people on this board who said it came out on DVD in August of 2004, but trust me, I have looked everywhere on the internet and it is nowhere to be found. So that was a great review.
Oh my gosh. Wait, you said his name was Ships?
That's his username, two P's. I don't know what it means. But
oh
yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I love that he managed to diss his dad in this review.
My dad was a piece of crap.
Nice.
My God.
So well, anyway.
That made me want to watch Tiger Town even more.
He sold me on it.
I know.
I'm ready for it. Have you seen it, Tiffany?
No, I have not seen Tiger Town.
Well, now you got to.
But it's on my list of things to watch. There's a lot of premiere movies that were like before me, but... Yeah, I definitely need to see this one.
Yeah, this one was early. I mean, I'm really into baseball movies if it's an all-women cast.
Oh, so a League of Their Own. So just a League of Their Own. Yeah. That's it. I mean, you cannot go wrong with that movie, so good choice.
Anyway, enough about A League of Their Own, which is not a Disney Channel premiere film. So I thought it would... also be fun to look at the movies that received the top five highest user ratings on imdb.com. So often we would go to Rotten Tomatoes, but a lot of these movies didn't have any ratings on there, so I decided to use IMDb. So the most notable Disney Channel premiere films, coming in at number five is a movie called Looking for Miracles, which has a rating of 7.6 out of 10. It premiered in 1989 and is about a teenage boy who gets hired as a camp counselor and brings his little brother along with him, and they end up bonding over their struggles at camp. It was nominated for a Cable Ace Award for movie or miniseries, and the older brother in the film, played by Greg Spottiswood, won a Daytime Emmy for Outstanding Performer in a Children's Special, while the actor who played his little brother, Zachary Bennett, was a nominee in the same category. The next movie, which I think Jess, your husband Garrett, said he's seen, in the number four spot with a user rating of 7.7 is Mother Goose Rockin' Rhyme, starring Shelley Duvall as Little Bo Peep.
I didn't know that was considered a film. I've never seen it. I've only heard my husband talk about it. I thought it was like a special. I didn't know it was a
It film. Is considered a film.
Wow.
It aired in 1990 and featured cameos from a bunch of stars, including Woody Harrelson, Cheech Marin, Cyndi Lauper, Paul Simon, Art Garfunkel, Little Richard, Debbie Harry, Harry Anderson, and more. So here's the plot description from IMDb. There's a crisis in Rhymeland. All the Rhymies, the characters from nursery rhymes, are disappearing. Gordon Goose, son of Mother Goose, and Little Bo Peep set off to find them. So despite how weird this movie seems, it won a Cable Ace Award for Children's Programming and was nominated in the Makeup category. It also won a Primetime Emmy Award for Costume Design for a Variety or Music Program, and even won a Peabody Award, which is a prestigious award given to programs that exhibit innovation and excellence in storytelling. So I really want to see this movie.
Yeah, I know that my husband Garrett loves it. He did love it when he was a kid. It's not like he's watching it now.
Ever since Disney Plus got announced, I've just been like waiting for these old school Disney Channel things to just hit like that service. I want them so badly.
Everybody tweet at Disney Plus that we need Tiger Town.
Every week I go on Disney Plus's like website and you can like request for them to put content on.
Yes.
And I have like a list of things that I'm requesting until it goes on, and then my next list will be on there, and then I'll do that. I've been faithfully doing it since it launched in November.
Oh my God.
You're doing us a service, Tiffany.
You are.
Yeah, but none of them have gotten on there. And I'll tell you which ones later, but none of them have gotten on there yet. And I'm just like, what are you doing, Disney Plus?
Maybe you need to send us your DCOM Disney Plus wish list for us to post on Instagram. Yeah,
I will. I have a ton, so I'll send it.
Perfect.
So the next one at number three with a rating of 7.7 is a movie called Love Leads the Way, which is based on a true story about a man named Morris Frank, who was blinded in a boxing accident and in 1927 became the first blind person to be matched with a seeing eye dog. After he discovers he can't take his dog onto public transit or into certain buildings and businesses, he fights to change those discriminatory laws. Morris Frank's relationship with his dog actually inspired the founding of the Seeing Eye and Guide Dogs of America. I also found out from IMDb that the movie is one of the rarest Disney films because it was first made to be a direct-to-video promotional tool for the Seeing Eye and Guide Dogs of America organizations. It then premiered on the Disney Channel in 1984 and was aired again 2 years later in 1986 on the Disney Sunday Movie on ABC. It was released on home video only briefly in the late 1980s, so VHS and Betamax copies of the movie are currently selling on eBay for around $70. So I thought that was interesting. It's really rare, yeah.
That's insane. Also, that premise sounds right up my alley, and I need to find it now. So I think
it needs to go on Disney Plus. Add that to your Disney Plus wish list.
I really need to, because as soon as I heard that, I'm like, and it's based on a true story? Oh.
Yes.
So dogs?
That sounds like something my mom would love, too.
Dogs, ooh. Disney, donuts. that's my those are my interests.
I love that. That's actually Dan, my husband Dan's interest too. So wow.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, donuts are universal. So the movie didn't appear to be nominated for any awards, but it clearly struck a chord with audiences who described it as beautiful and inspirational. It sounds like a really cool story. I'd like to see that one.
Same.
Yeah. So next up at number two with a rating of 7.9 is a movie called On Promised Land, which premiered on the Disney Channel in 1994. Set in Atlanta, Georgia in the 1950s, the movie revolves around the friendship between a young black boy and a wealthy white woman who at first have an antagonistic relationship and then become friends. The movie is described by users as a tearjerker, with one person even claiming that you will be shedding a tear at every moment. That doesn't sound like an enjoyable experience, but
I actually remember seeing that movie.
What did you think of it?
I don't remember details, but I just remember like that concept and that title and like commercials on Disney Channel for it and they run it. I couldn't tell you a thing about it though, but that just like struck a chord when you said it. I was like, ooh, I know that one.
The movie won a Cable Ace Award for writing on a children's special and was nominated in the children's programming special, actress, supporting actor, and art direction categories. And I always find it interesting when they win other awards outside of sort of the standard movie and TV awards. It was also a nominee for a Humanitas Prize, which honors film and TV writers whose work explores the human condition in a nuanced, meaningful way. So I thought that was interesting. I might want to look into other movies that have been nominated for this award, because it sounds like a really cool prize that they award for great writing.
Yeah.
And then finally, at number one, with an 8.4 rating out of 10, we have Anne of Avonlea, which was also known as Anne of Green Gables, the sequel. It's the continuing story of Anne Shirley, played by Megan Follows. Oh, her name is actually pronounced Megan, I just found out. So Megan Follows.
Oh my God.
As she accepts a teaching position at a girls' boarding school and butts heads with the principal of the school and an annoying rich family in town. The movie won Cable Ace Awards for Supporting Actress in a Movie or Miniseries, Costume Design, and was nominated in the Actress, Supporting Actress, Direction of Photography, and Original Score categories. I remember enjoying this movie, but mostly I remember enjoying the Avonlea series.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
Oh, I was obsessed with that. It needs to be on Disney Plus if it isn't already.
That was something I definitely watched a lot on Disney Channel.
Oh, I was so obsessed with Avonlea. So there were actually a lot of other Disney Channel premiere films that won or were nominated for Cable Ace Awards, Emmy Awards, and Young Artist Awards, but there are too many to list right now. So if you're curious about any of these movies, I highly recommend going to both geek23.com and imdb.com to find out more about them and read some interesting user reviews, as I shared with you. I'm kind of wrapping up with some of the last films in 1996 and 97 that people are confused about and they don't know kind of what category they fall under.
I know.
So, 100%. Well, Tiffany, if I'm wrong, let me know if I'm wrong.
Don't worry.
She will let me know. It was kind of hard to parse out like the conflicting reports. So this is what I found out. And Tiffany, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Okay. So the first is a 1996 movie called Susie Q, which is about a ghost girl from the 1950s who meets a boy from the 1990s and tries to help his family. And they end up falling in love. And as a fun side note, the movie starred Amy Jo Johnson, who was also the Pink Ranger on the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which I loved and my brother and I laughed at all the time. So the movie isn't even listed on D23.com, probably because it aired first on a network in Germany before being aired many times on the Disney Channel. The production company was Shavik Entertainment, and it apparently was not an actual Disney Channel movie, even though it was distributed by Walt Disney Pictures. Tiffany, do you know anything about this movie? Does that sound accurate?
Listen, Susie Q is a staple in this house. Dan Mason, my husband, is obsessed with Susie Q.
How cute.
One of the reasons I have to go on Disney Plus every week is to request Susie freaking Q, because he cries at that movie. He is a huge Power Ranger fan. Like, that movie is his number one top Disney Channel like premiere, and it's still under the premiere banner. Like, I know technically it was someplace else, but it's still technically a Disney Channel like premiere film. But like, that movie is a staple in this house. We have to like go and watch like really crappy YouTube videos to watch it, because he has to watch Susie Q. Like, we have to watch
that movie. I love it. I'm going to need to see that one.
I feel like we need to say, if any journalist or website is going to write something about DCOMs, consult with Tiffany, because she knows more about DCOMs than anybody I know.
Well, honestly, all you have to do, because of that trivia also, like, I had to go into some super deep dives to figure out what's a DCOM, what was not, etc. And the first DCOM, I don't care what anybody says, I feel like one person reported it wrong and then other people like ran with it, but it has to have the DCOM banner. And like, the first one that did was Under Wraps. So don't come at me with that Northern Lights movie. It's not a DCOM. Under Wraps is the first one, guys.
Okay. So that actually addresses one of them. So Under the Northern Lights, is that what it's called?
I've totally lost the title. I'm pretty sure it's Under the Northern
But
Lights.
That was another one that people were confused about. So I'm going to use my source, Tiffany, and I'm going to say that it's just
Northern Lights.
It's not a DCOM, and I'm going to say it is a Disney Channel premiere film, according to Tiffany.
And Wikipedia and Disney Channel. Like, there's like a Disney Channel interview, I think, with the president, and he like even states like the first one, and it's not Northern Lights. It's Under Wraps.
Okay, so that covers one of them. And then the next movie that confuses people is a body-switching movie starring Katherine Heigl called Wish Upon a Star.
Yes! I love that movie.
It first aired in 1996 on the Disney Channel. Oh, Tiffany ran away. I think she's getting something related to this. And re-aired in 2002.
She has it with her.
She has it. Okay, you ran away, and I knew it wasn't an emergency bathroom trip. I knew it was that you were getting paraphernalia. Yes, she has a copy of Wish Upon a Star right in front of us. So it was produced by the Lucadia Film Corporation and distributed by a division of 20th Century Fox. So it seems the movie wasn't actually made by Disney. What do you think, Tiffany?
Also, another movie that they consider also just like Susie Q, they still consider that a Disney Channel premiere film, even though it's not. I don't know like what qualified as a Disney Channel premiere film, but they definitely had different qualifications for those movies versus like what a DCOM is. Like, DCOMs are like produced by Disney Channel, like, et cetera.
Yes.
But like, those Disney Channel premiere films, because also like Parent Trap 2, Parent Trap 3, like all those, they didn't even premiere on Disney Channel for some of them, right, Jess?
So with Parent Trap 3 and 4, they did premiere on NBC, part of the magical world of Disney.
Yeah. So I think like with the premiere films, they're not limited to like Disney Channel. I think they just had a different scope or definition for like what qualified as a premiere film versus like DCOM.
Like maybe on D23 and such, maybe they consider it to be like a Disney made for TV movie.
Maybe they were just part of like their Disney Channel early lineup and they just became a part of the premiere family. A fun fact about Wish Upon a Star also, up until I owned the DVD, I didn't even see a scene in the movie because it got scrapped from the Disney Channel because it's not appropriate for Disney Channel. So that's why I know this movie did not come from, like, Disney Channel. There's, like, a whole, like, scene in the film where they, like, cut it. She, like, comes in with a boombox and, like, this really racy outfit. Mm-hmm. And she gets on the table in the cafeteria and does this, like, song dance thing, which is never shown on Disney Channel. Ooh, like, they show her with the boombox. They show her start the song. And they show students, like, bopping. And then they show the teacher turning off the song. But in the actual film, there's, like, a scene of her, like, lip-syncing to the song. On the table. So that's why I was like, I don't think this ever aired on Disney Channel originally. I feel like they had to edit it to air.
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, they did. And I think a lot of people are confused about it because it was aired in 1996 and then they started re-airing it a lot in 2002. And I think that's why people are confused and thinking it is actually a Disney Channel original movie, and it really isn't.
I mean, Disney Channel's famous for, like, re-airing movies decades after they first premiered. It's just, like, people assume it started.
Or that was when people started knowing what it was.
Right. Yeah. And they're like, oh, that was my childhood. It was in 1999. It's like, actually, it wasn't. It was earlier than that, but you just remember it because that's when you watched it.
Yes. Yeah. Another movie made by the Leucadia Film Corporation called the The
Paper Look,
I'm just going to leave this part in where I'm just going to tell the listeners that I had such a hard time saying the Paper Brigade that I had to say it like three times. So the Paper Brigade aired on the Disney Channel in 1996, but wasn't actually a Disney Channel premiere film, according to some Disney sources. So one thing I found interesting about the Disney Channel premiere films is that they featured a lot of serious and social justice oriented stories, including many movies that confronted racism and fascism, and many of them were also period pieces, with several films taking place during World War II. And it's not that all of the movies were serious, since some, like Not Quite Human, which was a comedy about an android boy, were made to be simply entertaining, but I was struck by how many of these movies were about important topics, especially in contrast to the Disney Channel original movies that would come later, which would clearly aimed at younger audiences and just kind of seemed to be made for fun. And, like, there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm curious as to how that transition came about, and maybe, Tiffany, you have some insight into that sort of middle period.
So
we can transition into
the
that
second
part.
Generation of DCOM.
Yes.
That's actually, like, the best setup ever. But before I do that, I just want to say the Paper Brigade, Suzy Q, and Wish Upon a Star were on rotation growing up. So I know those movies like the back of my hand. Like, I'll say the Paper Brigade and people are like, what? I'm like, you know, Grover, the kid he was in, like, another movie that everyone, like, would know him from. But, like, I know him from the Paper Brigade. It's so weird. Anyway.
That's another one I'll have to watch.
I also made Dan watch that one, like, pretty recently because I was like, you love Suzy Q. You got to watch Paper Brigade. They're all in, like, that same cusp of Disney Channel premiere to Disney Channel original movie. Like,
yeah.
I also wanted to mention two of movies that you didn't mention from that Disney Channel premiere that I wanted to know if you guys had seen.
Yeah.
Because they were remakes before they made official remakes. So one was Freaky Friday.
Yes, I have seen
with
that.
With Shelley Long before they made the Lindsay Lohan Freaky Friday, they had a remake on Disney Channel, Freaky Friday, with Shelley Long.
I remember that.
I didn't see that.
I definitely haven't seen it as much as the Jodie Foster, Lindsay Lohan one, but I have seen it before.
I grew up watching that remake so many times because, like you said, they replay those on Disney Channel so much. And it was, like, one of the ones that I just, like, always watched. It was a good one. It was a good remake. I always remember the scene where Shelley Long's, like, on rollerblades. I don't know. And she's like rollerblading. Yes. It's always like,
it's very of the time. Yeah.
I always think of Freaky Friday with Jodie Foster and how much she was skateboarding.
Oh, yeah.
All the skateboarding.
Well, and you know what's kind of funny is the most recent version of Freaky Friday, which is Freaky Friday the Musical, which was first at La Jolla Playhouse, and then they made a DCOM of the musical. They're on those hoverboards. They ride.
Oh,
there's
funny.
A whole, like, musical scene, at least in the stage production, where they ride on them. And then I believe it's in the movie as well. So it's like they had to think of, like, what's the version of a skateboard? Now, what's the version of a rollerblade for this time period? So it's kind of interesting.
That's cool.
And then the other movie is I grew up loving the original Escape to Witch Mountain and Return from Witch Mountain. I like grew up on those movies. They used to come on Walt Disney every night. They also made like a Disney Channel premiere movie remake of that before they had that in theaters remake with The Rock. Like they had, I think it was 1995, they had that and it was a Disney Channel movie. It was like an ABC one and it starred Eric Von Detten, y'all.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that.
And like, I grew up with that remake. So when they made the one with The Rock, I was like, excuse me, but that's the second remake. They already did this with Eric Von Detten. Like, oh my gosh. Yes. And they played it so much. I was like shocked. They don't even like talk about it anymore. That and that Freaky Friday, those two remakes that happened before the official like feature film in the theater ones are always like my childhood, and I'm just like, how are you gonna forget like you did this before with really good cast? I get so upset about it. I want to be in charge of putting things on Disney Plus because I feel like I have such a good knowledge of good stuff that people need to be exposed to.
Are you listening, Disney Plus?
If you were in charge, it would not be called Disney Plus, it would be called DCOM Plus, am I right?
It would be like the ultimate Disney experience. You know how like people are yearning for like old school like Disney and like old school Nickelodeon that they like grew up with? I would totally put like all that stuff that people like knew in the 80s and 90s on there. I'm like, what are y'all doing? Like, get with it. I need that job.
Tiffany, you need to take us into the second generation of DCOMs.
Okay, so from your segue, Melanie, you were saying that, like, the face of the Disney Channel movies kind of changed.
Yeah.
It's because that those early Disney Channel films were much more serious, literary-minded pieces. They had, like, a Charles Dickens show that was, like, the old Curiosity Shop. They had, like, a Heidi remake, a Great Expectations. It was more, like, elegant and more adult-driven family movie storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when Disney Channel transitioned from their premium paid network to, like, cable, it opened the door up to a bigger audience. So their audience increased, which means, like, it became more kid-focused because a lot more kids had access to it. Because before, it was, like, adults were paying for it. So they were kind of, like, trying to appease adults because they're the ones footing the bill. But once it became basic cable, it's like, all right, well, this is a kids network. Everybody can get it. And now the kids are able to access this. And so they wanted it to be more kid-driven family programming versus adult-driven family programming.
Right.
So they wanted their Friday nights to be kind of like a must-see TV for kids. And they wanted the Disney Channel original movies to be something that kids talked about. And like the cool kids would know the lingo kind of a thing. So they focused more on having these DCOMs a little more kid-driven versus, like, the older ones, which were adult-driven family movies. So now that we've, like, discussed this, Under Wraps is the very first DCOM. It's Under Wraps. It's the one that had the Disney Channel original banner. And, like, also the other reason I'm 100% confident in this is because Disney Channel themselves, when they were celebrating the 100th DCOM, they replayed every single Disney Channel original movie leading up to their 100th episode, and they did not include Northern Lights or Suzy Q or any of those other ones before that, and they were very specific in saying, like, it's the ones that had started with the Disney Channel original movie banner, and Under Wraps was the first one to do that. So I know it says on multiple sources that there's so many conflicting ideas, but Disney Channel themselves have said no.
And did they transition to that new DCOM banner when it went from a premium cable to a basic cable network?
I believe, yeah. I believe that all, like, happened in the same shift. I believe all of that was, like, around the same shift. And originally, like, that transition wasn't all at once. They, like, started off in, like, a couple networks, like, a couple, like, areas and becoming basic cable and then eventually, like, rolled out to more areas. But I think that whole shift was just, it was just all a part of the whole wave of the shift. So even in my notes, I was like, Under Wraps is the first DCOM, despite people thinking it's Northern Lights. Even though Under Wraps was the first DCOM, it said that, like, the one that really started grabbing people's attention was Brink. Like, that was the one that I think started with the most popularity. Like, Brink was one of the DCOMs that people were the most excited about and were talking about. So that's, like, when it really kicked off into its popularity. I think that's when people really started paying attention. The movies started out when they first started with the DCOMs. They only had, in 1997, Under Wraps was like the only one that year. And then the next year, in 1998, they had three DCOMs that year. They had You Lucky Dog, which starred Kirk Cameron, which is on Disney Plus if anyone wants to watch it. I think it's a gem. It's so silly, but it's hilarious. If you love dogs and like wacky humor, it's so
dogs,
cute,
Disney,
so
and donuts. Everyone's gonna love it.
All it needs is some donuts.
The concept of You Lucky Dog is that Kirk Cameron, when he was like a young teen, was a dog psychic, like a legitimate one, and had his fame to being able to understand like what dogs were thinking. And people had like hired him, and he was super world famous for his like dog psychic knowledge. And then somehow later in his 20s, he lost it, and he was like a fraud, but he still like ran a business, but his business was no longer legitimate. Like he'd have clients come in and he'd just be sleeping while the dogs were sitting there and then just like make something up. And then like one day a client comes in, he actually could understand this guy's dog, and he's like freaked out because he hasn't had this ability in such a long time, and shenanigans ensue, and it's like a whole thing. It's
that
so great.
That sounds cute.
I also feel like that should be our new Cartoons to Castles catchphrase, maybe in our intro, because I feel like in every episode we are constantly saying shenanigans ensue. It's all of our like 90s focused episodes. Oh, the 90s gosh. Were big on shenanigans.
Shenanigans. Yes. If shenanigans didn't ensue, it wasn't the 90s. Okay.
No. You're absolutely right.
So just insert that in our intro. We'll say Cartoons to Castles, the history behind the mouse and magic, where shenanigans ensue. Perfect.
I love it. I love it. It's perfection, you guys. And then after You Lucky Dog, they had Brink. And then after Brink was Halloween Town. So that was like the three that came out in 1998. And in 1999 is when it starts to get like to my favorites. My number one favorite DCOM of all time is Xenon Girl of the 21st Century.
Yes!
Yeah, and that was the first DCOM of 1999. And then after that, it was Can of Worms, The 13th Year, Smart House, Johnny Tsunami, which is also a favorite of mine for a different reason, Genius, Don't Look Under the Bed, also a favorite of mine, and Horse Sense. Johnny Tsunami I love because it starred, co-starred my favorite, Lee Thompson Young from the famous Jet Jackson, the hottest boy to ever exist. So... I loved that movie. And then Don't Look Under the Bed is like the best. And you know what? I'm going to die on this hill. It's the best Halloween DCOM film. Yes, it is better than Halloween Town. Sorry, guys.
Wow. I need to watch it. I've never seen
Don't
Look
Under
the Bed.
Yeah, I need to watch it too.
Oh, it's so good. I recommend it every year. I had like, okay, before Disney Plus, I owned Don't Look Under the Bed and Xenon. Like we bought it. So I could watch it because it wasn't like something you
could just
like
put on. I didn't even know you could buy them.
Yeah, I bought it digitally, I think on Amazon like years ago. That and Xenon, because I like didn't want to be without it. So I still like own those on like a digital copy of those before Disney Plus even existed. And before they even put them on the Disney Channel app, because there was a while when all of them were on the Disney Channel app as well. But I had to have those too. I think it's like the best Halloween themed DCOM there is, mainly because it's creepy. Mm-hmm. Like for real, for real. Like when I was a kid, I remember being like, I'm all creeped out by this. Like it's a bit scary. And then also I just loved the plot. I thought it was a really unique story for like a Halloween movie. It was super unique. I loved the concept. And the actors, I love the actors. The guy who's in it is from Even Stevens. He's like Ren Stevens's nemesis. He plays Larry Houdini in the movie. He's from Even Stevens.
Well, I am totally going to watch this now. Perfect for spooky season coming up.
Yeah. Oh, don't look under the bed, guys. If you haven't seen it, don't sleep on it. It is so good.
And don't look under the bed on it.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't sleep on it or look under the bed.
It's a story about the boogeyman. It's so good. It's so good.
Sounds good.
And then in the year 2000, we got Up, Up, and Away. And then we got like The Color of Friendship, which is probably the first DCOM that went back to that old thing that you were talking about, Melanie, where there was like a lesson and it had more like important meaning to it. It wasn't just fun and whimsy. That was one of those movies that kind of like touched on serious subject matter. they abandoned escapism and got real. And that one's actually based on a true story, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, when you were listing those movies, Melanie, that's where my mind went. I was like, these kind of remind me of Color of Friendship, which is full circle because our guest on our Disney Toon episode, Erica Kurzawa, her dad has a cameo in it. Yeah, he's in it.
Yeah, he's got a cameo in that. So The Color of Friendship is a story about a Black family in D.C., and they get a exchange student, and the exchange student's actually a white South African girl, and this is during apartheid. So there's, like, you know, racism and, you know, all these issues that are happening, and this girl gets sent to America and to stay with a Black family, a prominent Black family that's in, like, government. Like, her dad's a senator in the 70s, and she's so used to, like, apartheid, and they still, like, are racist and have Black people as second-class citizens. So it's a very interesting story based on a true story, which I thought was super cool. I absolutely loved
it. Yeah, I didn't know it was based on a true story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That sounds interesting.
I love that. Yeah. Now I want to watch that again. I haven't watched it in a while.
There's so many to watch.
Yeah, there's so many. But ever since I, like, did that trivia, I have been, like, going back down the rabbit hole and, like, going through every single one. And it's been a delight.
That's,
like,
fun.
Now is the time to do it.
Yes, it is. It is. And after The Color of Friendship is Alley Cat Strike, the one about the bowling league. I don't know if anyone's seen that one, but it was, I used to hate it as a kid. And then I rewatched it recently and I was like, actually, this is pretty good. It's cute. So I don't know what my deal was when I was younger, but it's a cute one. It's cute. Rip Girls, Miracle in Lane 2, which is also more serious one. It was about a boy in a wheelchair who takes up soapbox racing. So that one was a really good one. Stepsister from Planet Weird, which I cannot escape anymore because everyone laughs at me because I know way too much about that movie. And everyone's like, what is this movie? I think I had like 4 trivia questions about it. And everyone's like, okay. That one's an odd one because it's about a girl who's a alien, but she comes from a gaseous planet where they're like all bubbles. And she's afraid of the wind because their original form is a bubble.
What?
Yeah.
Oh
my gosh.
And her dad falls in love with a human woman who has like a daughter. So like the woman and her daughter, you know, she's a single mom. And so her mom falls in love with this alien and the alien has a daughter. So they're like stepsisters. But the girl's weird because she's some weird bubble. And she's like,
she's a bubble.
She's like, I'm afraid of the wind. She says like things like, I'm afraid of the wind. Or I fear the wind. And then she's like, I wish I were gas. Like, oh,
so Tiffany, this was based on a true story, right?
Yeah.
Stepsister from Planet Weird. More like DCOM from Planet Weird.
It's an odd one, but it's hilariously campy.
I'm like, here for the humor.
Yes, there's Ready to Run, Quince, which stars Kimberly J. Brown. Halloween Town fame. Yep.
Yes.
And then The Other Me, which stars the youngest Lawrence brother, Andy Lawrence. Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire, which is really good because it's got the guy from The Nanny on it. And then it's got Aunt Zelda from like this teenage, Sabrina the Teenage Witch Melissa Joan Hart. Phantom of the Megaplex and then The Ultimate Christmas Present. So that's like how many movies came out in 2000.
A lot. That's so funny that so many movies came out in the year 2000 on Disney Channel because the year 2000 is also the year that has the most Walt Disney animated feature films that were released in 1 year.
Oh, so that's
Y2K,
wild.
They came in swinging big.
Right. And that was the year that had a Disney Channel original movie every month. There were 12 DCOMs.
I remember that.
Imagine like how... What a time to be alive.
Well,
right?
It really shows the specific time frame that I watched Disney Channel because I always thought of Disney Channel original movies in my head as being a monthly release. And then, like, I hadn't watched Disney Channel in a really long time. And then when we started watching it again with my daughter, I was like, wait, like, they don't release them monthly anymore? Where have I been?
You're lucky if you get 2 now. It's crazy.
Yeah, which I'll get into that later, but.
Yeah, and then 2001, we didn't have 12, but we had 10. We got our sequel to Xenon. We got Xenon the Zequel.
Yes.
Motocrossed, which is another great one.
I loved it.
Motocrossed is like a teen take on the Shakespeare play Twelfth Night. So it's about a girl who moonlights as her twin brother so she can motocross race. It's awesome.
It kind of reminds me of
she's the man,
but they're both based on Twelfth Night.
Yeah, She's the Man is like the second time they've made a teen Twelfth Night, but Disney DCOM did it first.
They did. They came in first with the teen Twelfth Night.
See, people forget like who did it first, and then they're like, oh my god, I love that. And it's like Disney Channel did it first.
I love when things are full circle. Just want to randomly say this probably isn't interesting to anyone but Melanie and me, but Melanie and I both were a part of a production of Twelfth Night together. Many years ago when we did theater together. But anyway.
That's amazing. So. That's also one of my favorite Shakespeare plays. So
yep, it's the best.
Mine awesome. Too, my fave. For sure.
My favorite is Taming of the Shrew, but Twelfth Night's a very close second. Luck of the Irish, Hounded. Another favorite is Judd Jackson, the movie, for obvious reasons. The Ginny Project, Jumping Ship, which is the sequel to Horse Sense. People don't realize that, but it is, because it's not like Horse Sense 2. It's just has a whole different title. The Poof Point, Halloween Town 2, Calabar's Revenge, and Twas the Night. So 2001 had like a good chunk
of
DCOMs. I also want to mention I like Jumping Ship more than Horse Sense because Matthew Lawrence is in that one, and he's my favorite Lawrence brother. So,
and he just wished you a happy birthday, didn't he? He sent you a cameo.
He definitely did, because along with Lee Thompson Young, Matthew Lawrence was also one of my giant crushes. I definitely cried when I saw that cameo. I was like, oh my god, my man.
That's cute.
Yeah. So then we have 2002. Which has Double Teamed, Cadet Kelly, True Confessions, which I did want to stop at because True Confessions is another one of those movies that I recommend to so many people because it's one of those got real DCOMs, but it's so good. Have either of you watched True Confessions?
No.
Oh my God, you guys. Okay. True Confessions is about a girl who's an aspiring filmmaker named True, and she makes a documentary about her family and her twin brother who happens to be on the spectrum.
I did see this with Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf starred in True Confessions, and True Confessions always has, like, makes a mark on me because at the time, Even Stevens was out. So my only experience with Shia LaBeouf was through Even Stevens, and I just thought he was, like, a very funny kid. And then I saw True Confessions, and that was the first time I realized that this kid was an extremely good actor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wanted to share a story that I found in my research, too, with the president of Disney Channel. He was talking about how when they make DCOMs, they don't make the DCOMs with Disney Channel stars in mind. They make the DCOM, and then they see who will fit. Like, they make the script, and then they see who could fit the roles. And they say a lot of times the audition process is super hard, and it's a long and very difficult audition process. And one of the stories he talked about was the True Confessions audition with Shia LaBeouf. When he was thinking about – when they were thinking about making True Confessions, they really felt like they needed someone – who could bring an audience to a film like that, because I think kids were so used to seeing those escapism, magic, whimsy movies that it was going to be like kind of hard to get them to want to watch a movie with a more serious subject matter. And that one definitely does have a way more serious subject matter. So he wanted like a star in it that could bring an audience. So he thought of Shia LaBeouf, and he called him up and he was like, hey, this is your audition to lose. So Shia trained for 2 weeks. And he came in and auditioned, and he kind of overdid it. He, like, overdid the audition. He leaned more to, like, the – I don't know if you've seen What's Eating Gilbert Grape, but, like, kind of like Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie. Like, he leaned into, like, the Gilbert Grape-esque character of, like, someone with a mental disability, which was a lot more of a severe condition than what the role in the film needed. Mm-hmm. So Shia LaBeouf was like, I really wanted that role. So he – was like, you got to give me another chance. You got to give me another chance. So then he went back and he did a ton more research. He did a lot more research medically. He visited kids who had the exact same condition as his character in True Confessions. And he studied and studied and studied. And then he came back and then he finally nailed it and got the part. But it was just something that like he really, really wanted to do. But he had to do so much work to try to like get that role. And if you watch that film, you're going to be so impressed. I swear. Like, I rewatched it recently. I was like, oh, maybe my kid brain just was like, oh, this is so good. But my adult brain was like, no, like, this is such a good movie.
Oh, cool.
Shia LaBeouf really shines in it, and it will have you crying. It's so good. Like, it's one of, like, the top DCOMs, in my opinion, just, that like, quality-wise.
And that's such an interesting tidbit about the audition process, because one would assume they just cast whoever is going to have synergy with their sitcoms, because I think you mentioned Cadet Kelly was before that, which stars Christy Carlson Romano, who was Ren Stevens and Even Stevens, and then for Shia LaBeouf to be, you know, in the next film right after it, it seems, oh, of course they're just casting their current stars.
Even Stevens. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really interesting to hear that it's not as, like, simple as that.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that he bombed his first audition, because that, you know, sort of forced him to do more nuanced research.
Yeah, I mean, I, like, watched it with my much more adult, like, mindset, and I was just like, I'm still so impressed by this film, just for like knowing it's a DCOM and thinking, like, looking at that subject matter. And it's so hard, because you get this story from this teenage girl who has a twin, who, you know, like, twins usually have, like, a bond and a connection, and she struggles because her twin is different than her and can't really understand and do things the same way. And, you know, she's a teenager, she loses her patience. She loses her patience with her mom. There's, like, a really interesting dynamic between her and her mother, and her mother thinking that she can help. But it's that, like, angsty time in a girl's life, and she's got that to deal with. And, you know, also trying to, like, relate to her brother. And it's just, like, such a deep subject matter.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I can't believe they made this as a DCOM. It's, like,
crazy. In that year, yeah.
I'll have to watch that, yeah.
It's really good. I really always am, like, standout DCOM. True confessions. So then after that, when we got Get a Clue, which was Lindsay Lohan's DCOM, what do you call it? Debut.
Yeah.
She got her DCOM debut. I also rewatched that one, and it's still as delightful as I remember. And it stars Bug Hall, who played Alfalfa in the Little Rascals movie.
Oh my gosh.
He is such a cutie patootie, so I love him. It's such a cute movie. So if you've never seen Get a Clue, also highly recommend. Like, is this like Tiffany's like top picks here?
Love it.
Gotta Kick It Up came after that one, and America Ferrera kind of got her start in that one.
I remember that. That was a really good one.
A Ring of Endless Light was after that one, and the actor or the actress in that one was Misha Barton.
Oh.
She got her start in that one. The Scream Team. Kat Dennings got her start in that one. Like, these are all roles that they had before they had their big break.
Yeah.
So, and then that brings us to 2003. We had You Wish, Right on Track, the Even Stevens movie, Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off, The Cheetah Girls, and Full Court Miracle. A thing about The Cheetah Girls is that a lot of people think that High School Musical shook up the DCOM game, but they often forget that The Cheetah Girls did it first. Like, that was the first of that broad-based music-driven movie for DCOMs.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, like, a soundtrack and, you know, music. So that one often gets overlooked because High School Musical was such a phenomenon. But,
well, love the Cheetah Girls even more. If you follow me on Instagram, you may know I have the Cheetah Girls vinyl from Disney Music Emporium. Tiffany knows. Quick story. Tiffany got sent vinyls, and I got sent vinyls from Disney Music Emporium. We're like, you have the exact vinyls I asked for, and you have the exact vinyls I asked for. And then we realized they sent one another each other's orders, but we live near each other, so it was an easy fix.
Oh, that's good.
But the thing that makes me laugh is I was like, the Cheetah Girls, what am I supposed to do with this? And you were like, I actually requested the Cheetah Girls. And I was like, well, you can have this.
I know. And then we realized
before we realized it was her order, I was like, well, you can have it.
So which one did you have?
It was like a whole bunch. We had like one another swap. But the Cheetah Girls was the one that made us realize, had the revelation. We had one another's orders mailed to us. But what I wanted to say too about the Cheetah Girls, and this is a story that like I love to tell one-on-one to friends. It's going to be the first time the story's been broadcast. But I believe it was, pretty sure it was 2002. If not, it was 2003. But pretty sure it was 2002. I went to Disney California Adventure 1.0. And they used to have this thing. They used to have this thing. I forget its exact name, but basically, like, at least for the first couple years it was open, an annual thing where they'd roll out a red carpet and they had all these limos parked outside DCA, and it would be like, it's a weekend of the stars, and all the stars were, of course, Disney or ABC stars, like Bonnie Hunt, George Lopez, iconic. Raven, Lindsay Lohan, like, all these stars were walking around the parks, and, like, obviously with plaids, but they each had a slot where they had a meet and greet, where they had headshots, and they would sign it, and you could, like, say hi to them, and there was one where it was Raven, and I wanted to meet her so badly. I read the Cheetah Girl book. So I was obsessed with the Cheetah Girls before it was a DCOM. And I was just convinced I was going to be a Cheetah Girl. So I was in line to get Raven's autograph and say hi to her. The line was really long. I realized, oh my God, I'm not going to meet her. I just wanted to tell her how much the Cheetah Girls means to me. And so I was like yelling towards her, like being like, hey, hey, like, I really want to sing you my favorite song from Cheetah Girls. And like, I was 12. So then I thought, wow, I seem so cool. And this is going to be my breakout opportunity. But of course she sees, oh, it's a kid who wants to sing. Like, let's let her. So she had like a tech person, like, because they had a mic with it where they were making announcements and doing trivia while we were waiting in line, which one of the trivia questions, which was, what are the names of Ursula's eels? And I was the only one who knew it. And at the time I thought, I'm the ultimate Disney. I have the ultimate Disney knowledge.
Well, you do. But anyway.
So the PA or the cast member, they brought me the microphone. And I was just in DCA. This was in the area of A Bug's Land that is now Cars Land. Or that was adjacent to It's Tough to Be a Bug, where they used to have like a little splash pad and stuff. That was where it was set up. And I sang, I don't want to be your Cinderella sitting in a dark old dusty cellar. And then when I hit like the end part, where like Raven's like, I'm gonna set me free. Like the high note, like she looked at me and was like gave me a gesture like, yes. Yes, sing it. And I was like, wow, she thinks I'm amazing. But of course, now I look back at it and I'm like, she was just cheering on this kid who wanted to sing to her. And then I got a headshot with her autograph. And then I went to the Rainforest Cafe gift shop and bought stuff that was cheetah print so I could start my career as a cheetah.
Oh my God.
That sounds
this
like is the best
story I've ever heard in my entire freaking life. And I'm so mad that I never heard this story until today. Like, what
I
is this friendship?
Either, I don't even. Either.
What? How dare
you?
You
have heard it? Well, I'm not.
No. How dare you? This is what you should tell people when you meet them for the first time. My name is Jess, and I sang for Raven Simone because I knew I was going to be the next Cheetah Girl. Like, that's how you should introduce yourself. And the fact that you haven't upsets me.
And she gave me a gesture of approval.
She said I was amazing and I knew I was going to be the next one. So, like, I don't understand.
I got my apparel at the Rainforest Cafe gift store. God. I was ready. Also, I
Jess
saw
is
her.
So cute.
I love this story.
I got to be a guest at the premiere of the live action Dumbo. And when I was at the party, I saw Raven there. She's not gonna know who I am, but I waved to her and she just like kind of gave a nod like, mm-hmm, I get it a lot. Like, it was sweet. Yeah. You know, she gave me a sweet little nod, but I was so tempted to be like, hey, do you remember that random kid that sang Cinderella to you in A Bug's Land at DCA? And I remember like telling one of my friends, I almost said that to her. And she's
you
like,
you should have done that.
And she's like, she's not going to remember. I said, but she sees so many people. But but sometimes stories are so random. You always remember
yes.
them.
Also, like, you're at Disneyland. I'm sure they didn't do those a lot. And I'm sure.
I think it was only for two or 3 years they did that.
Right. But still, like, do you think that happened every time she was in Disneyland? No. Probably not. You know, that's probably like
because there was
a
microphone there. How often is there just a microphone at Disney? But it was there. So that is my Cheetah Girls story.
I
admire your bravery in just being like, I'm going to belt this out for the movie star. I'm going to belt it out right now.
My only regret for you is that I wish you had gone up to her at that Dumbo premiere and been like, listen, back in 2002... I need to tell you this. Listen, back in 2002, and just like go into it and see if she had remembered. Because even if she didn't, it's like, well, of course you didn't. But if she did, how cool would that moment have been?
Actually, I realized, and I'm not saying this for clout, but I did realize it wasn't the Dumbo premiere. It was the Nutcracker and the Four Realms premiere. And the only reason I wanted to correct you is I'm not sure if she's at the Dumbo premiere. And in case someone's like, she wasn't at the Dumbo premiere. I never saw Getty Images. I got it wrong. It was the Nutcracker.
Even better, because that probably would, she probably had more time to talk at that one, Jess. Like, next time you see Raven Simone, I swear to God, if you don't throw, you better not throw away your shot. You need to go talk to her about it.
Do not throw away your shot.
Shot. All right. Sorry to derail that, but I just wanted to
First of all, I'm so glad you did, and I'm mad you hadn't shared it sooner because, my God, that is like the greatest effing story. I'm so upset I never heard that before today.
Oh.
Anyways, so the world has been blessed with that memory, I swear.
Great. Hopefully Raven's listening and she remembers too.
Yes. Well, Cheetah Girls was the first of its kind to do that. It kind of laid the groundwork. And then 2004, so like, you know, in the 2000s and 2001s, I feel like they were pumping out these DCOMs like a lot. There was like 10 to 12 a year. But then a couple, like later on, it starts to become kind of like 6 a year. So it's like a lot less. It's like every other month or so.
Yes.
But we get Pixel Perfect, Going to the Mat, Xenon Z3, the third one, which I think is the worst of this franchise. It's not great, guys. It's not great. Stuck in the Suburbs, Tiger Cruise, which was another one of those serious subject matters because it was about kids that were on a naval ship, like a naval carrier, and they were trapped on it during September 11th. Cruise. I don't know if you guys have heard of what a Tiger Cruise is, but that's like a thing in real life where like families and kids get to be on like the naval carrier ships with their military parents, and they go out on like a little, they call it the Tiger Cruise. So it's like a time for like your family to be on there. And that actually happened, I think, on, there was a Tiger Cruise out to sea during September 11th. So I think they kind of like use that as the concept for this fictional story, but it's like based in like a factual experience, if that makes sense, even though it's not like a true story.
Yes.
And then we got Halloween Town High, which I think is the last of the Halloween Town films that starred Kimberly J. Brown, right?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah.
And then 2005, we had Now You See It, Buffalo Dreams, Kim Possible, So the Drama, Go Figure, Life is Rough, The Proud Family Movie, and Twitches.
I love Twitches.
Yes, it's such a good one. I want to remark also about the reason I picked this segment or this like portion of the segment is because, like, honestly, I lived in Germany from first through third grade. So growing up in that time period, I did not have the Disney Channel. I did not get the Disney Channel until I moved back to the United States, to Northern Virginia in 1993. And that is my first experience with Disney Channel. Like, I got some of these shows in Germany, but it was through like other networks, or it was in syndication because I was not like, I was not in the United States, but they had this channel called AFN, which is like the Armed Forces Network, which is like what you'd watch overseas, and you would get like shows that would play in the United States all on that network. So we would get like random shows from different networks that you would watch here all on that one network over there.
Wow.
So I would get like some of these Disney Channel shows. They would like pick, I don't know how they picked them, they would pick like different things to show on the AFN. But I didn't get like full-fledged Disney Channel until I moved back to the United States. So a lot of my experience and memory of Disney Channel starts in that 90s period. So I started out like with the Mickey Mouse Club because it was still on at that time. But it was like the later episodes. They kind of played them all, always in syndication. Mm-hmm. But these movies that were like in this time period were like my immediate exposure to Disney Channel. So by the time we get to like to 2005, I had started getting older. Like, I left for college. I'm in college at this point, but I still would pop back in to watch these movies because they would be the sequels to things that I watched as a kid. Like I said, in 2004, Z3 came out. Since I loved Xenon years before, I had to watch Z3. I think Johnny Tsunami had a sequel, and I was like, well, I watched that when I was younger, so I want to see the sequel. But I wasn't like as avidly like tuning into Disney Channel original movies. This is like when I started to phase out of my DCOM hardcoreness. Like, I watched all of these movies like back to back. I never missed a DCOM, but then I started to be like only popping in and out when they became sequels of things that I had loved previously. So, yeah. And then High School Musical is was my niece and nephews. That was like their generation. And yeah. I got into it because they loved it. It wasn't like my generation.
Well, thank you so much for sharing about all of that. I loved hearing your rankings of DCOMs.
Yeah, now we have so many movies to watch.
I know.
I have to like, I think I might have to type it up so you could like put it on Instagram.
Actually, yeah. I would love to do that as a Cartoons to Castles Instagram post of your official ranking. I would love to post that in our feed. So if you have the time to do it, I would honestly love that.
I might not do all of them. I might just do like my top 10.
Your favorites. You know? Yeah. Perfect. Like, that sounds great. So now we are going to get into kind of what's considered the third generation of DCOMs. You know, obviously like a generation oftentimes can be considered, you know, a decade or something like that. And the time periods we've talked about, Melanie talked about 1983 to like 1997, and Tiffany talked about 1997 to 2005. I'm going to talk about 2006 to present day. And I did notice that there were kind of certain things that made these periods feel cohesive together. Like Melanie, you talked about how a lot of the movies were centered more for family entertainment and true stories versus more kid-focused entertainment. And then obviously with Tiffany's generation, it moved from premium cable to basic cable and became DCOMs versus premiere films. And for 2006 to present, I've noticed there's definitely a slower production schedule, as Tiffany mentioned, and also a lot more musicals. A lot more musicals. Musical palooza. And I kind of wanted to look into...
That is the best description.
Yeah, musical palooza.
I love that. This is like, you know how, I'm sorry, Jess, you know how like they rank the eras of like Disney animated features?
Yes.
You know, it's like the golden era. We should make that for this in like 2006.
We're branding it.
Yeah, it should be considered the musical palooza era of DCOMs.
To put it in perspective to how different the production schedule changed. So once Disney Channel original movies went under the DCOM banner, so from 1997 to 2005, in this 8-year period, there were 62 DCOMs made in an 8-year period. Okay.
That's a
now
lot.
We go to 2006 to 2020, aka Musical Palooza. This is a 14-year period, and only 47 movies were made. So 47 movies in 14 years versus 62 movies in 8 years. So it's a big difference.
But
apparently, the slowed down production schedule is working for them, because out of the top 10 highest rated DCOM premieres, so millions of viewers per. I'm not talking overall.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm talking about ratings, meaning viewers
tuning in.
Yeah.
Viewership.
People who tuned in. The 10 highest rated DCOM premieres, meaning like the day it first aired, all but one of them are from 2006 to 2020. And I read this article where Gary Marsh, who's still the current president and chief creative officer of Disney Channels Worldwide, talked about those. So number 10 kind of began Musical Palooza. I know Cheetah Girls was technically first, but it seems like since High School Musical, it's kind of been a continuous pattern. And obviously High School Musical just did super well, as we will learn right now. In the 10th highest place for millions of households watched, High School Musical had 7.7. The 8th and 9th place is a tie with the Cheetah Girls 2 with 7.8 million viewers or households watched. And it's tied with Cadet Kelly, which is the only pre-2006 movie that's in the top in a top 10 spot for highest rated premieres. And then just in case you guys are curious, I'll share the others. 7th place is Camp Rock 2, The Final Jam, with 7.9. And then Teen Beach Movie with 8.2. Princess Protection Program with 8.4. And then, let's see, Descendants 2 and Camp Rock tied with 8.9. Wizards of Waverly Place, the movie, is number 2 with 11.4. And then we have a huge jump for the number 1 spot with 17.2. Does anyone have any guess?
I know what it is.
Okay,
do you want
what is
to,
it?
Sure. I don't want to... It's High School Musical 2.
High School Musical 2 is the number 1 highest rated DCOM. So... We have at number 10, 7.7 million households. And then High School Musical 2 has 17.2. So it's a huge jump. A huge jump.
I want to say that, in my opinion, High School Musical 2 is a superior High School Musical film. So
it's really good. It's really good.
It's so good.
So it's a huge deal in that it has held the number one spot for DCOM ratings for 13 years now. But High School Musical 2's premiere also broke records and is a part of basic cable television history. And again, this
well
is
deserved.
Like a reference to its premiere, not necessarily like in all of time. But in terms
that's
of
super
its
well deserved.
Premiere date, it's the most watched made-for-cable TV movie ever and is the most watched broadcast on cable TV, which even surpassed the debut of Monday Night Football on ESPN.
Whoa!
So the power of High School Musical 2, right?
You know, that is crazy.
Musicals versus football. Musicals win!
Wow. Life imitates art, because like I know High School Musical is like basketball, but I just meant it was a competition between
yes!
sports.
Yes!
Anyway.
You know, of that list you read, Jess,
yeah.
I was extremely surprised that, like, Descendants 3 wasn't on it. Or 2, you know what I mean?
No, like, I will say some of the ones, like Descendants 3, things like that, some of them, in, like, some of the Zombies movies, did have large, like, L plus 7 Nielsen ratings. So, like, within the first 7 days it premiered. But these are in terms of the first time it
day.
Aired.
Okay.
The first day
crazy,
it aired. Man. And I do think probably a big piece of that, why some of the newer films aren't on the highest premieres, is because a lot of people don't watch movies the first day they air anymore, because it's so easy to access them
streaming
after the fact. Or you could record
it's
it. You could DVR
now.
It. So I think a lot of them do have higher in terms of the 7 day ratings, but not necessarily the first day. Like
I never thought of that, because like High School Musical 2, we weren't doing streaming services.
Yeah,
it was like
2007.
On TV.
Yeah.
You had to watch it. Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, it broke a lot of cable TV records. And Gary Marsh, who I mentioned, is president, chief creative officer of Disney Channel Worldwide since 2011, considers High School Musical to have elevated DCOMs and influenced the generation of DCOMs since. And he feels like High School Musical really made the DCOM brand turn from a kid-focused channel to a global phenomenon. And he accredits that to High School Musical. He said in an Entertainment Weekly interview, there wasn't an opportunity to buy a CD for a while, but it was the right era when iTunes was starting. So we had the first taste of what could happen if you had music available in some other format. The Cheetah Girls was the first of our broad-based music-driven movies. It was a giant success, but there was a reluctance because nobody had ever seen what a television movie could launch either as a franchise or a product line at retail. Which, that's the end of the quote, brings me to my next point of how this newest wave of DCOMs has changed from first and second generation. A big way it's changed? Merchandising. There wasn't really merchandising for DCOM films until High School Musical. We learned a bit in the Disney Toon episode of Cartoons to Castles how the ability to merchandise a movie or a series of movies is a huge deal in terms of the longevity of a movie in popular culture and, of course, money. We started to see some merchandising with High School Musical. In fact, as we learned in episode 3 where we talked about Disney collectibles, I love looking for vintage Disney outfits. I did a recent vintage Disney shirt purchase, and sometimes they'll include a little gift, like they'll include a little Disney sticker if it's like a Disney item you bought or some little thing they have laying around as like a little gift as a thank you. And my most recent vintage purchase came with an unopened pack of High School Musical 2 trading cards.
Oh!
I got it just 2 days ago before we filmed this episode. So I just thought, that's funny, because I'm literally going to talk about merchandising and how that was a big change for DCOMs. But wouldn't you guys agree we really started seeing merchandising with the Descendants franchise? The Descendants franchise was DCOM merchandise palooza.
Yeah, dolls, costumes, everything.
Oh my gosh.
I needed like accessories that they wore, like if they had purses or like necklaces and stuff. I was like, oh, I need that.
And we saw some merchandising with Zombies, but yeah, Descendants very much so. And here's the kicker of why we see so many musicals. Of course, they're making money from these corresponding product lines, but not physical product isn't their biggest money-making product. It's the music sales, which is a huge reason why they do so many musicals now. So it makes sense that so many DCOMs, since the massive success of High School Musical and High School Musical 2. I mean, since then, of course, there was also a High School Musical 3 that was in theaters.
Yes, that was not a DCOM.
We had High School Musical 2 and then 3, which was a theatrical release, but there was Lemonade Mouth, Camp Rock, Teen Beach Movie, Freaky Friday, the musical, which I mentioned earlier and is amazing, by the way, Zombies, and of course, Descendants. And the being able to make money as well has gained lots of brand awareness and press from the success of its music is a huge deal. To put in perspective, High School Musical, in the first year and a half after its debut in 2006, it made over $100 million in DVD and CD soundtrack sales alone. And the Descendants soundtrack debuted at number one on the Billboard 200, and Descendants 2 debuted at number 6. So obviously, like, from number 1 to number 6, you went down. However, it was a large release week, so actually the quantity of album sales for Descendants 2 was higher, even though it was technically lower on the list. It sold 30,000 more album units compared to the first Descendants.
Wow. Probably
because of Tiffany. as well as 6 of its songs being within the top 10 soundtrack songs chart on Apple less than 24 hours after Descendants 2 premiere. And the Descendants 3 album debuted number 1 on the iTunes charts. Zombies 2 debuted as number 1 in the Children's Billboard chart and ranked high on iTunes as well. I mean, the list goes on. And of course, with all these rankings, i.e. money made from songs and albums purchased, also comes the amazing press from these articles. Like, they're just, if a song lands high on a Billboard chart, or these albums land high on a Billboard chart, there's so much press surrounding that. So, of course, that's helping them gain more recognition, and it's helping them have more people watch the movies and buy the albums. So musicals for Disney Channel original movies has definitely worked for them in terms of their movies becoming a global phenomenon for the whole family and not just kids. So, yeah, that's kind of what we've seen from the latest generation of DCOMs. And I would love to just know from you guys, do you have a favorite DCOM from this wave? So
heck
from
yeah.
High School Musical till now?
Heck yeah.
What is it?
You go, Tiffany.
I know what you're going to say.
You know what I'm going to say.
Are you going to say Descendants 3?
It's Descendants 3. I love that movie with all my heart. When it came out, I think I watched it like every day for like a month. It's ridiculous. I have a difficulty when it comes to Descendants 2 and 3 soundtrack wise, because I think Descendants 2 also has a superb soundtrack. So I feel like if we're talking soundtracks, I'm kind of tied between Descendants 2 and 3. But yeah, the movie itself is Descendants 3.
I love Descendants 3, but I do have to say that my favorite is probably Descendants 2. And I just love High School.
That's a good one.
And I just love High School Musical just because, you know, it's a classic.
It started it all. It really started the new generation, like you said. I think High School Musical 2 is better, but I like it.
And I love it forever for giving us High School Musical, the musical, the series on Disney Plus, which is amazing.
Hey, yes. Yes. Yeah.
You know, I will be honest and say that I actually haven't seen many of them. I have seen Teen Beach Movie because my husband loves it. He decided to try it one day and he put it on and he loves the 60s beach movies. We just watched a whole bunch of them one summer and it was really fun. So he put on Teen Beach Movie and it was really cute. But the only version of High School Musical I've seen is there was like a riff tracks of them where they talk over the movie and kind of make jokes about it.
I've seen that.
I think that's the only version of High School Musical I've seen. Yeah. So I really need to see more of them, because Descendants is like a story that I would enjoy. I just haven't gotten around to watching them yet.
Yeah,
I think you would love it. And Clara, your daughter, would love them. Amelia loves them.
Oh, she already loves the costumes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I will say that Descendants 2 and 3 are far superior to the first one. The first time I saw Descendants, I was like, this is cute, kind of cheesy, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then, like, Descendants 2's soundtrack happened, and I was like, oh, this slaps. And then, like, the story of 3 is so good. I was like, I just think, like, 2 and 3 are superior.
And I just want to give a shout out too, because I forgot to list this under my favorites. But another favorite of mine is the Freaky Friday musical that was a DCOM. I did see it when it was at La Jolla Playhouse, and the stage production of it was great. But the movie was fantastic as well. And I feel like it doesn't really get a lot of recognition and love, but it's awesome. The soundtrack is great.
I haven't seen it.
The soundtrack is fantastic.
Okay. You know what? I'll put that on my list of DCOMs to watch. I haven't gotten that far. Like, I'm still, like, reliving my childhood going through the DCOMs. And then yes. I'm going to, like, eventually start with the movies I neglected. Yeah. But I never saw that one. And I also have never seen Adventures in Babysitting because the original movie is one of my favorites, and I kind of
scoff I do feel at they're very remake. Different. Yeah. They're very different.
So I didn't want to like look at it.
I do that too with some remakes. I'm like, but no, I can't.
I could tell you though, because like, you know, I know we talked about Freaky Friday remakes that we liked. The musical just like adds to the Freaky Friday love. It's not one where you're like, this isn't my Freaky Friday. It's just a very different interpretation.
I mean, there's really too many Freaky Fridays to be just like Parent Trap. It's like there's too many to be like pigeonholed to that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus like Adventures in Babysitting, there's just one.
Yes.
Like Freaky Friday, there has been like four of those. Before you wrap up, I just wanted to give a couple little like fun facts.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Go for it.
Number one fun fact, because I was mentioning actors that were on DCOMs before they hit their big break. Did y'all know our own Captain Marvel, Brie Larson, was in a DCOM before she got her big break?
No.
She was in the DCOM Right on Track.
Oh my gosh. I vaguely remember that.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, she starred in that one. So if anybody's a Brie Larson Captain Marvel fan, she got her start before she even had her big break on Right on Track. And then also Emmy Rossum of, what's that show she's on
now? Emmy Rossum.
She was on
Shameless,
Opera.
Right?
Shameless, yes. Yeah. And she was in the Phantom of the Opera movie, and then she's on Shameless.
Yeah.
She was in Genius.
Wow.
On the DCOM Genius.
Oh.
And then an Alley Cat Strike, we had Kaley Cuoco.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
From Big Bang Theory. And also the current Harley Quinn in the Harley Quinn cartoon that's new on Warner Brothers.
Wow. Cool. It's interesting. It's so cool to hear, like, so many people get their start on Disney Channel.
Yeah. So, like, those are some fun facts. I also wanted to ask you a trivia question. Do you know which Disney Channel star never starred in her own DCOM?
Oh, no. Hang on. Can you give us a hint on, is it, like,
it's a girl.
The generation you covered, second generation, before High School Musical?
I don't know, because she's a Disney Channel star, but she never starred in a DCOM. And I don't remember, like, what generation.
Knowing you, I want to say that it's...
I don't think it's my generation.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, like, is it one of the stars of So Weird?
No.
Okay.
It's not Alex Johnson.
Okay. And then, yeah. And then, oh my gosh, I cannot.
No, it's not my generation because I've never watched the show.
Yeah. You never watched the show.
Mm-mm. It's not my generation. So.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of people did. It's a popular show. Like, you know the show. I just.
Is it a boy or is it a man?
It's a girl.
Okay. And she was like the title character in like her show? Or like the main character?
Yes.
Well, well, no, that's not true. I was going to say Hilary Duff because Lizzie McGuire movie was theatrical, but she was a Cadet Kelly.
Yep, she was in Cadet Kelly.
I don't.
Did Miley Cyrus ever have?
No, Kyla. They
it's
did
my,
family.
It's Miley Cyrus.
Because Hannah Montana was theatrically released. Oh, that's right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's Miley
Jessica,
Cyrus. Good
you
job.
Startled me.
Sorry.
Good job. Melody, you got it.
I was sure I did not know the answer, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I'm like, it's a well-known star. Like, everybody knows her. I wasn't going to give you anything tricky. Like, it's a star that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. It's Miley Cyrus. She never starred in her own DCOM. She did make a cameo in High School Musical 2, but she never starred in it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and then my last tidbit I want to say is more of a complaint.
Tiffany needs to file a complaint.
It just goes back to my Disney Plus. Do you know there are DCOMs that are not on Disney Plus?
I mean, sure. That's what it sounded like.
There are, let's see.
We need more on there.
There are 5 DCOMs that are not on Disney Plus. Out of all
what
the
are
DCOMs,
they?
The very first DCOM Under Wraps is not on Disney Plus.
Hmm.
Can you believe?
For shame.
I just was wondering.
I just Googling.
I'm Googling something because I thought I read that they were adding some new stuff, including DCOMs for Halloween time, and I thought Under Wraps was one of them for next month.
So, okay, so there you go. It's coming if it isn't. The other one is my number one complaint, the famous Jet Jackson the movie, but also the famous Jet Jackson the show isn't on Disney Plus yet either, so it's like, put them both on there, please.
Okay, I was correct. Under Wraps is coming to Disney Plus for Halloween.
Excellent. Excellent. So it'll be there, but it's not there now.
It's not there
now.
Which
is strange, though, right?
It's coming, I believe it's coming September.
But so it'll be coming soon, but it's not on there now.
By the time this airs, though, it'll probably be on there.
But it wasn't on there at launch, which is strange because you would think the first DCOM should be on there.
They were saving it for spooky season, I guess.
Strange, because there's so many other spooky movies on there.
Also, the Tower of Terror movie is the other one, a spooky movie being added next month, in case it is.
Not a DCOM, just in case you guys get confused.
No, not a DCOM. I just was letting you know.
As a side note.
The other movie that is a DCOM that is not on there is The Ginny Project. The Ginny Project is a movie about a scientist's family who bonds with a chimpanzee who uses American Sign Language. Ooh. That's not on there. Also, Radio Rebel and Tangled Before Ever After, which is a DCOM that we didn't talk about, but it's weird because it was a movie that was made as the intro to the Tangled Ever After series. Mm-hmm. It's like the pilot is the movie, but they branded it as a DCOM. So, little known fact, that's technically a DCOM.
Because I feel like they also played that on the channel Disney XD, which did want me to go back to the ratings where my ratings were also specifically for the premiere date rating on Disney Channel, whereas a lot of the newer ones within that 24-hour period, they'll air it on Disney XD and other channels like that. So the ratings get split between the channels sometimes. So that also contributes to why these somewhat older films often have a higher rating. Nerd alert. Yeah. Just wanted to clarify that.
Good to know.
Good to know. But yeah, so those are the five DCOMs that are still not on Disney Plus yet. But if I had it my way, they would be.
Well, thank you for all of your rankings and knowledge. I mean, you are a resident Disney Channel original movie expert. And so thank you so much for taking us on this journey.
You're welcome.
I loved it. This was the best way to spend my Sunday.
It was fun.
Would you mind telling people where they can find you on social media?
Oh, yes. On Instagram, you can find me at Follow the Yellow Brick Girl. And I don't really tweet a lot, but I am on Twitter under Tiffany Linnae S.
Awesome. And Melanie, where can we find you?
You can find me on, I was about to list your socials, Jessica, because I go to them more than mine. you can find me on Keep Quirky on Instagram. That's at Keep Quirky. And on Twitter at Keep Quirky OC. And Jess, do you want to tell them where they can find you?
Yeah, I am at the Healthy Mouse on Instagram and healthy_mouse on Twitter. And if you want to check out our Cartoons to Castle social media page, where I definitely want to share some of Tiffany's fabulous photos dressed as DCOM characters, she has a few. and also just more to compliment the episode, you can find us at Cartoons to Castles on Instagram and Cartoons Castles on Twitter. And again, we would love if you have a moment to leave us a review or ranking if you enjoyed this episode on Apple Podcasts. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Till next time, keep dreaming.